Welcome to the triumphant return question mark of the Book Wars
Pod.
Hold on.
Oh God.
Perfect.
All right, that's a wrap.
No notes.
We're done.
I know, right? Really. And all of us finished reading like 5 minutes before we start recording. So you know, it's all the usual here. This is episode 179. And we haven't recorded since August, I think. So that's special. But this month is the 7-year anniversary of us doing this crap, which we started because we were very, very sad during...
Kid, I think it's 8 years.
Is it 8 years?
It is 8 years.
Oh,
it's
no, I can't count. But you all knew that. Thanks. Yeah,
we
no,
only celebrate it in orange years.
Correct. Yeah, no, we started this podcast back because we were depressed that Trump was president. Now everything old is new again. So here we are.
They can't put a tariff on podcasts.
Chris,
do they know that?
No.
There's a lot they don't know, Rana.
I have
no
lot of opinions about taxation routes in the galaxy. Or taxing the trade routes.
Serious, Star Wars has never been so relevant.
I'm so fucking upset.
Guys, I don't know what you're talking about. Star Wars has never been political.
Oh. My God. Wow. I was going to read the title of the book we're talking about, and then Chris broke my brain, as usual, so that's good. Thanks a lot. We are talking about Mission to Disaster by Justina Ireland, which is one of the middle grade books. We have a lot of feelings, which we will get into shortly. But first, folks, we would love to welcome our new producer, Devin, to the pod. Richard had to step back to deal with many important health things. Please send him good wishes. This poor man is dealing with a lot right now. But we are very happy to have Devin with us. Devin is a buddy of mine from grad school who is working on his PhD. I don't know if you have anything to say about yourself, so I can just, as I put you on the spot immediately.
Surprise. I don't know. I'm just vibing. Happy to be here. Really enjoying myself. Been, you know, catching up on the pods. Been very fun. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
This is probably the last time you're ever going to describe this podcast as fun. But welcome.
Yeah, I was going to say, famously, nobody has ever called this pod fun before.
Oh my God.
Also, soon to be Dr. Producer Devin.
It's true.
Soon is a stretch, but I'm gunning for it.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. But you know, anytime you want to. Devin is probably what the more horrible parts of the fandom would describe as a filthy casual, but you know, that's we accept that about him.
You know, I did in fact read through the Wikipedia of this, and
hell yeah.
I don't know what most of the words were, but it was like a fun read, and there were some cool words in there, and I'm excited to like hear you all talk about yeet. Like, that's gonna be nice.
That is
the star of the show.
That's who was mentioned like two times. That is legitimately more than probably any producer has ever done on the show in the history of the show since Kristen decided to stop reading the books. So that's fucking awesome.
Also, like, we have yet to watch either Skeleton Crew or Tales of the Underworld. Are we filthy casuals now?
Joke's on you.
Yes.
I've always been one. I haven't watched Andor.
I also have,
which is a personal problem with you. It's very gay. I don't understand what more you want.
I want to watch it. I just like need to watch it.
I feel like I need real brain space to watch it, so I'm waiting until I have like a bunch of work stuff happen, and then once that's done, I'm gonna rewatch season one and then season two. That's my excuse. I feel like I don't want to waste my brain watching it, like, and then be like,
I just keep like rewatching The Pit instead because that feels easier than watching a new show.
I'm gonna mute myself.
Damn, Rana has strong feelings about,
not about The Pit, but just like, seems like a really high stress show to be like comfort.
I don't know what to tell you.
That is burb for you, though. So,
thank you. No, whatever works for you works for you.
Oh my god, fucking incredible. Also, definitely need to hire. Whose cat stepped on their keyboard and started?
I think that was probably Tony.
Yeah, no, I was gonna call that out. Like, thanks to Tony for his contribution.
Yes, of just 3333 infinity.
Yeah, I did put him into like the chat box before he could make too many damages, but apparently I was too late.
That's okay. It was not the super important part of the outline. I just also want to highlight that I absolutely bullied Devin into doing this and Rana helped. So you know.
It was my going away present.
Yes,
I would like to point out that I am happy to be here. Like, this is...
He's not under duress that we're aware of. At least not in the recording.
Devin lives 40 minutes away from us, so, like, I could really just be, like, sat there just, like, holding a knife to him in his kitchen right now.
You could drive. Like, Devin...
Just kidding. Devin's happy to be here.
Yes, for any law enforcement officers... number one, I wouldn't talk to you, but number two...
Yeah, I'm like,
yeah, I was going to say, don't, please.
I'm fine.
Okay, what are we all drinking today, if anything? I only have tea because I'm old and I'm about to, like, fall asleep. I've been, like, sleepy, I feel like, for, like, 2 weeks. So that's great, because it's just been raining here, oddly. For like 2 weeks, it's disgusting.
Did you move to Portland?
It's been really not Denver.
It's not.
I came completely unprepared. I have no drink, so while the rest of you talk about what you're drinking, I'm going to go get one.
Fuck you, Chris. All right, whatever. Rana, what we got?
So I was going to say listeners may be aware, but I haven't been on the podcast since like 2022. So I think mid 2023. So I recently moved across the country, but because I'm a cheap bitch, I refused to leave all my alcohol behind. And
just smart.
You know, my friends are people like Kate and Chris who don't like their houses are already full of alcohol. They don't want my, again, cheap shit. So I was able to fit into my pod, not this pod, but my moving pod. Words have many meanings. All of my alcohol. And so I am drinking a beer that was in my apartment that I put in a box. It still tastes great. Also, my dog is trying to contribute. Hey, bud, any husky noises for the pod? No, damn. It's an Breckenridge Brewery Avalanche Amber Ale. It's pretty good. I was going to not drink on the podcast, and then I was like, it's the podcast. So it just says caramel malt body with a light hop character. It's good. It's very, I don't know. I would almost think of it as a beer. That's all I can say. But it's delicious. Oh, did it pick up Argos's noise there?
I heard a little thing.
That was Argos, yeah. Okay. You're not drinking, bud. You're too young. All right, I'm going to mute while my dog talks. I might even take him out while you guys discuss what you're drinking.
Burp.
I made myself a little cocktail. Blueberries are in season and on sale. So I made like a Moscow Mule, but with muddled blueberries along with the mint.
Ooh, that sounds really nice.
Nice little pink beverage.
That sounds so good. You're so fancy over there. My God.
I found a recipe online this weekend that was like, it's a champagne mule with blackberries. And I was like, blueberries are on sale. Let me go buy champagne, vodka, ginger beer, limes, mint, just to not use the champagne because I realize I don't have a good champagne stopper. But it's still good. I only made it several days after I bought everything for it.
That's fine.
Not having a stopper is only a problem if you let it be a problem, Burb. I'm just saying.
It's true. I'm getting too old to drink a whole bottle of champagne
on
a random Tuesday.
We're getting a little... getting a little old for bottles to the face at this point, so
have you looked outside? Not, it's actually lovely out right now, but like in the world.
Oh my
have
god.
You been on Reddit?
Yeah. I'm exclusively on Chihuahua Reddit. Thank you very much.
Oh my god. All right, I just want you to know just for that, I'm making you go last. Devin, what are you drinking?
Damn.
I've been trying to drink more water recently, so I've just got some water from my tap. So I guess shout out the municipal water supply. I don't know where we get our water from. I should look into that.
Oh, I can tell you. Where do you live?
I live in Boulder.
It's probably just the Boulder Reservoir, but
hell yeah.
I don't know where that what feeds into that.
Sorry, I work in water, kind of.
Oh.
Which is hilarious. It's amazing.
It's going to take too long to figure it out, but I'm sure it's being treated very well.
Hell yeah. I hope that stays. Yeah.
That would be good. When the infrastructure weirdness. What, Chris?
I was going to make a fluoride RFK joke, but I'll stop.
Fuck off.
I am drinking a Tangerine Riot fruited IPA from Great Divide. It was left over last time we had people over, and I've been eyeing it, but I like honestly almost never drink beer if we don't have people over.
That's true.
So yeah, now I'm doing it.
I want a sip of that at some point.
I'm also drinking it out of the, like, a comically large Darth Vader, like, allegedly a koozie, but it's very clearly not a koozie that the Rockies gave out for Star Wars Day a couple years ago. It's like his entire head that the can fits into, and like I have like very large hands and I have trouble holding on to this thing.
Does it keep your hand warm and your beer cold though?
It does. Like a koozie. It does. I mean, it gets the job done. I wouldn't say it does so efficiently, but
we'll take a picture for the gram.
It seems like it's a lot. Yeah,
it's I can't use those because yeah, it's just it's so big, it's so large. Anyway,
I also unplugged my microphone to let my dog outside because he's going crazy for some reason. The East Coast, he's just like zooming. He zooms every night in the yard, but he wouldn't wait. So, you all had a little field trip with me.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I was just like, are you outside right now?
I am, because my dog needs to shit and won't do it because he keeps running in circles. So I'm listening and just making faces rudely.
Yeah, well.
Who among us, Rana?
Chris, I think you're the only one on the pod who runs in circles, actually. Okay. Now that I think about it.
It's like I don't run.
But exclusively before I shit, to be clear.
That's the best time to run.
Yeah.
Yes,
please. You know, one thing I love, well, there were actually shit references in this book, but like Star Wars doesn't talk about shit that much. I appreciate it.
Sometimes.
Talks about fodder.
Okay, wow. Before we talk about Star Wars, actually important things. So for this book, we are highlighting the Stop ICE Raids Alert Network, which is at stopice.net, despite the .net, I swear to God, this is a real thing. So basically what this is that people have built an online system so that they can put out blasts of emergency alerts for people to kind of crowdsource where ICE is. So you can basically either go on their website or text in and be like, ICE is in my neighborhood, and they will stick that on their website for public notice so that people know what's going on. They have a live feed going, which I think is really helpful. Because it's an escape, so that's cool.
I think Argos is ready for his moment.
No, actually, I'm so sorry. I didn't want to respond because we're talking about serious things. He's having a little bit of a zoomy inside, so I got him a milk bone. But anyway.
He's Argos outraged by... Right.
He's very ICE's clear. He's like when I got pulled over when I first got into the state. And the police officer was like, is he going to bite me? And I really wanted to be like, let's find out. But then I thought they might shoot me, so I didn't. I mean, at least, like, police officers regularly shoot dogs, so at least he survived.
That's true. Oh, God. You're about wrong about that. So anyway, if you want to report ICE activity in your area, you can either go to stopice.net and just send it in yourself. You can also text report to 877-322-2299. That will also work. I'm pretty sure I read those numbers correctly. I have number dyslexia, so that's rough. But yeah, no, please, this is a resource. Please use it. It's purposefully a website and not an app, so that if the cops yoink your phone, you don't necessarily have to have a record of it on there. So that's, yep. All right. Star Wars.
Definitely not cop shit, famously.
No, we're talking about the Jedi doing being cop shit.
Fucking Stellan. I hate that guy.
All right. So
was he even in this?
No.
No.
Okay, I hate him always.
We just hate that
my
guy.
My hatred burns with the fire.
Just for the record.
Can you? You're just on one. This is what happens when Chris doesn't podcast for like 6 months. He just turns into whatever this is. or he makes like horrible dad jokes to me, and then I'm just like, and then I just don't laugh, and it's not gratifying for him, so that's cool.
That's actually why Kate has been so insistent on restarting the pod. It's so that I have an outlet that's not just her.
I respect that.
All right. So, this is a theme that we've been discussing ongoing with the High Republic, but since we are diving back in after a long hiatus, let's talk about it again, especially because it's a kind of like a train of thought that Imri has throughout the book about just like, what is a Jedi and what do Jedi do with attachment and feelings and what is the role of the Order? So we'll start big picture. This poor child has many concerns about the role of the Jedi and their relationship to and use within the Republic. So when and where are we before we get into it? Because that's
High Republic.
Thanks.
Nailed it.
That's both a place and a time.
Yeah. Correct.
This is very true. Yeah, so we're like, I would say several months after the last High Republic book that we read, which was Out of the Shadows, I want to say, also by Justina Ireland, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so they talked about how, like, Mari Santeca died at the end of that book. Vern is kind of, like, trying to figure that shit out because she gave a secret hyperspace path. So, yeah, Vern just continues to be a very troubled 17-year-old with a lot of responsibility.
18-year-old.
18-year-old.
She says she's 18.
Right. 19?
18.
18. Okay, I can't hear.
Which one famously. Is 18? I wasn't paying attention.
Vern.
Okay. Thank you.
But yeah, that's pretty much it. So I would also say we're roughly a year after the whole High Republic series started with the Great Disaster.
Which is when
say it's been a big year.
Yeah, no, when the ship exploded in hyperspace and pieces just started flying out of space and hitting planets. That was fun. A lot of people died.
But it was cool.
I mean, it was cool and also fucking awful. Like, I remember, like, listen, do I love playing with hyperspace physics? Yes. Do I like it when, like, you know, my non-existent like beings in a place that doesn't exist also died? Not really. That feels bad.
You are not gonna enjoy our next book then.
Yeah, I know what happens. It's fine. Anyway. So we're also after the Valor Republic Fair, which was that big terrorist attack that the Nile did that made everybody real mad and then try to wipe them out. So the Nile theoretically are gone, or so people think they are. They're actually in hiding. So we're kind of in a lull where the Jedi have assisted in trying to get rid of this threat, and they have kind of been acting as like the Republic's rent-a-cops basically at this point. Not only are they doing relief efforts, but they're also going into battle, doing a lot of intelligence work and stuff like that. But now that they think they're in this lull, Imri has time to think about, well, is this the road we want to keep going on or not? And he is real nervous about that. And especially, the continuing level of like this emphasis on, violence and action as opposed to just like nice scholarly contemplation or anything like that. So that's cool.
To be fair, he is very correct to be worried about this.
Oh, yeah.
For obvious reasons known as Star Wars. And I think it's, like, really interesting that his, like, main... First of all, he's a feelings Jedi, which exists. And he's like, what if we don't kill people? Which, great point, my guy. I have some bad news for you. Welcome to Rent-A-Cop, Inc. This is your life now, buddy.
Great. Incredible.
He's very soft. I like him.
I know. He's just like, he's a highly sensitive Jedi.
Yeah, and that's a great point, Burb, that he is like, his special Jedi power is that he has big feelings. Because, like, you know, we're not in the prequel era of, like, do you have feelings? No, you don't. Thanks, Yoda. But you do still see a little bit of this tension with him of, like, is he allowed to be having these feelings that he can't control? And, like, even more than, like, a regular teenager can't control their feelings. Like, he is dealing with his own feelings and everybody else's feelings and, like, kind of struggling to figure that out, what to do with that and how to reconcile that with being a Jedi. And you see that a little bit with, like, when he's on Starlight and trying to figure stuff out with Eivar and with the security people. Like, he, like, has, like, various thoughts and he kind of keeps them to himself because he's like, I don't know that I'm supposed to be, like, sensing people's feelings like this. And so it's definitely, like, some tension there that makes him kind of a weird fit for the Jedi Order still.
I mean, to be fair, that's also kind of with him a privacy issue. Imri's actually selling all your personal data.
At least he's learned not to tell people what to feel most of the time. I mean, he still does it a little bit, but it's better than in the earlier books where he was like, you're sad? No, you're not sad. Love it. There's a whole talk about consent in there, about people's emotions. Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
Yes.
Star Wars never change.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it is interesting. Another thing that's interesting about this book is we've basically reunited the cast of the first High Republic book that we read.
Second,
what fucking ever. That was also Justina Ireland writing a middle grade book. Path of Courage, right?
Yes.
seeing the gang a year later and how they've changed and grown and been and feel deeply troubled is interesting. The other thing I was, like, really noticing for me is that, like, so we get to Dalna and we visit the Jedi in the temple outpost there, and these are folks who kind of specialize in more of the soft scholarly. We are here to study the archives and understand the local culture and the whatever fucking plate tectonic shit going on the planet, which becomes very relevant later, obviously. But it's a lot less of, like, I think what people generally think of when they think about Jedi, especially, like, you know, most people's basis of knowledge is the Skywalker saga. And even in the prequels or the Clone Wars, there's a lot of emphasis on, like, lightsaber training and battle training and all this other shit. And that's not what's going on here. We have, like, people who have graduated to Knight who are fucking terrible duelists, for example. And I think that's really interesting. I don't, like, I can't say that, like, 200 years later that person, let the Order would have found that person valuable. They probably would have got booted. So, yeah.
There was one part where, like, it's kind of highly implied that this is a place where, like, the Jedi go to rest.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, not like a Jedi spa, but kind of like a Jedi spa. It's like, oh, we have all these rooms to meditate. Maybe when we're done with this mission, like, Emery's thinking about, oh, I'll ask Vernestra if we can, like, go to one of these somewhere else. And we can get away for a couple weeks and, like, meditate and reset.
Yep. Jedi sabbatical. you know.
I also love, I put this later on, but I'm realizing it fits better here. The juxtaposition of like, oh, they're so scholarly. Like, oh, they're, look at their fruit. It's staining their clothes. Hee hee. They don't have enough extra clothes. Then also we find out there's like some weird shit in the history of this planet with the Jedi. And I don't know if I just missed what actually happened. It seemed quite vague. And I was like, this is what I want to know.
They didn't tell us.
Because, you know, the Jedi are too cop adjacent to not have some fucked up history. So I found it really interesting to think of that perspective of like, sometimes when the Jedi come into the story, they're very moral and this and that. And there's often like just no mention of history and how they got their power. And so I really want to see a short story or a book or some sort of context of like, what's the background here? What happened? I just found that really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
But theoretically, always... if the High Republic phase two went back in time about 150 years, that might be a thing that several books go into. Just throwing that out there.
Oh my freaking God.
It certainly felt like a seed that was waiting to sprout.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's
for
more
sure.
to that for sure.
And it also, we'll talk about the evil scientist lady also in a hot second, but the fact that she also participated in this battle that went horribly wrong, like, they were layering for sure some crap that happened where.
Was she in this battle that is referenced as, like, the Jedi conflict with the.
She wasn't part of that, but she was part of a different civil war
one, okay.
where
yeah.
basically there was just a hell of a lot of collateral damage. And she thought that was neat because
she sure did.
Yeah.
And because she got to kill so many people.
Correct.
She was basically like, I got to have these cool weapons. So why would I go to an academic university? I'm sorry, I can't talk. Academic institution after. Sorry, y'all. You can tell I'm not the one getting a PhD. Where learn happen? I don't know.
It fine. No one on the spot knows how to read, speak, or, you know, do anything relevant to anything.
To having a podcast, for sure.
It's, yeah, exactly. Correct. 8 years, y'all. All right. So, zooming in also a little bit, Emery's also thinking a lot about attachment versus what's a normal friendship, what is forbidden by the Jedi. And we know that by the time we get to the prequel era, it's like, no friends, no family, do nothing. Just be, I don't know, a rock with no feelings. And that would be ideal for fucking war crimes Yoda. It's just to have nothing. Just do nothing. Do nothing at all. Be an empty vessel. And I'm like, that's not healthy or good. Barb, you told me you had many things to say about this. So I'm going to just let you go.
My strong opinions are mostly on the latter parts of the outline, but I don't know if I have much to say about this, but it's just like, it is interesting to see that the Jedi like are all befriending these people in the places they work, which like having friends is good objectively for your health. I'm sure it helps Jedi shit be easier. Because, I don't know, don't ask me about regulating feelings. I can't tell you a goddamn thing. But there's, like, a lot of, like, I don't know. I feel like they're getting, like, too close to people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to be, like, pro-Jedi, no attachments. But a lot of what we've seen... Again, maybe I'm projecting. I did not say it a first time, so there's no again, but it's fine. There's a lot of, like, homoerotic stuff in the High Republic as a whole.
True.
Homoerotic in general, and also just, like, these friendships are getting a little too charged.
No, but, like, I see what you're saying, though, because towards that point, you know, We're getting to a point where it's like, you know, Emery's like ruminating on this and being like, you know, we're just friends. I'm not attached. And I'm just like, how long do we have to read this over and over again before it's like you're trying to convince yourself that that's still true kind of thing? And also, I was kind of like looking, side-eyeing a little bit for Nestra at the end of this book where Eivar asks her to join this mission to hopefully like route the Nile for good, and the thoughts she she's thinking about her friends who've been affected by the Nile mostly, and not necessarily like all the people that died in the Great Disaster or at the Republic Fair. And it feels like revenge.
It's big for her. Personal revenge coded, mm-hmm. for yeah. sure.
Famously, which is not the Jedi way.
And I think we do see them address, or we see Justina Ireland address it in this book, like when they get to the name of the planet.
Dalna.
And they're like, hey, can you guys stay and help us out with this? Or like, we need to stay and help out with this.
Right.
We do see Vernestra like work through those feelings about, I'm really out on this mission to like save my friend. But this is my job. This is my purpose. Like, I'm going to sit here and help the local Jedi deal with whatever kidnapping Nile problems are here on Dalna.
Yes.
And yeah, like, it works out, but that's very much the reason that like, you're not supposed to form the attachments is because it would be very easy for her to get sidetracked and be like, no, we're just going to have you met my good friend Anakin Skywalker. It's very easy to like be sidetracked and just go totally like, no, my friend is in trouble. I'm going to go save her. I don't care about anything else.
That's what War Crimes Yoda said.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's a direct result too of them becoming more of this protector role for the Republic, because like part of the like ethos of the Jedi is, and like why they have this kind of almost monastic lifestyle, is because they don't want to form those attachments. And like, you know, that's, you know, you can argue about whether or not that's a good idea, but like, it is important to note that the reason they do that and the reason that like it works for them is because they don't have these attachments to institutions either. And some Jedi, thanks Stellan, like have just made it sure that they jump in, you know, all the way into having these relationships with both individuals and institutions that they now need to carry around with them. And so they're not thinking about like necessarily what is the best thing for the galaxy. They're thinking about, I have feelings about what was done to people that I care about, what was done to you know, Valo, other planets, to Dalna now. And it's really coming up very quickly that there are going to be a lot of conflicts about, why are we doing this? Are we doing this because it is what the Force is telling us to, or are we doing this because we want to, because we have these personal attachments?
We're actually doing it because Stellan wants to be on the holonet again.
That's exactly why we're fucking doing it. Stellan wants a shiny badge. But yeah, so it is problematic. And so when you have Imri out here being like, am I allowed to have friends? Whereas like, really the problem is the Jedi being like, we are going to take responsibility for the galaxy. And like, and that's always kind of been the kind of philosophical puzzle of the Jedi, of like, do they go the Uncle Ben route of like, with great power comes great responsibility, or mm-hmm. do they like mm-hmm. stay unattached?
Okay, famously, Devin Uncle Ben like immediately dies.
Well, it okay. No, this
becomes
nope,
a
different
legend.
Different podcast.
Miranda.
Chris, can I ask you a clarifying question?
Yeah.
You're not referring to like Stellan Skarsgård, are you? Like,
no. This, okay. No. Okay. Okay. That is an important.
Sorry, I'm trying to like glean through osmosis, and I'm like,
so there
that
is
could be right.
So there is, and a good reminder for anybody who listened to our last episode like a year ago and hasn't thought about it since then. There is a main character Jedi in this series named Stellan Geos,
and he sure does think he's the main fucking character. And
he is basically like made himself the poster child for the Jedi being a galactic police force.
Oh, ugh.
I do love the mental image, though, of everyone just being like, fuck Stellan Skarsgård, like, casually in these books. Like, even though he seems like a lovely person, like, I just love the idea that everyone is just, like, all these, like, meta references from the authors of, like, fuck Stellan Skarsgård.
And notably, not, like, in-universe fuck Luthen from Andor.
Right, exactly. Separate. Very separate.
Oh, is he in Andor?
Wait, are you... Burb.
I haven't seen it.
You didn't see season one?
I watched I watched like 2 or 3.5 episodes.
Yeah, and
he was in them.
All over them.
What year did that shit come out? I don't remember.
2022.
That was a long time ago.
It wasn't.
He was also in Thor.
Correct.
And Dune.
Amazing. And like a and lot of movies.
A lot of things. And if he's not in it, one of his children is. So.
I'm sorry, wait, Burb, of all people, you haven't watched fucking Chernobyl?
I know.
Whoa.
What?
I know.
For those
who
don't know, Burb is like a serial, I don't know what the word is, but like very interested in Russia, did like
Russophile?
Her degree on Russia.
I was gonna say Russophile.
I don't know, I'm making
like,
it up.
Is that too strong a word to use these days? I don't fucking know.
It's not a word I feel comfortable using these days,
yeah,
but
right,
I did
right.
study
fair,
Russian in college
Burb prefers
and I did
Putin
focus
file.
On it in my degree.
She's got like shirtless Putin on a bear or whatever the fuck hanging
yeah.
in the room.
I mean, listen, who among us?
Because she's a big fat lesbian.
I was gonna say the only shirtless man that Miranda wants to see is Putin. Yeah. Going back to what we were talking about with friendship and attachment, although maybe Burb considers her attachment to Putin. I was thinking a lot of like kind of what gets at the core of this is this moment where Imri thinks like that's not attachment, that's just being a good person.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember reading that and being like, oh, this poor kid, like, you're gonna have a rough life. You got a lot to balance here. But also I can't help but wonder, given his like emotional tie-ins to the Force, like literally his empathy being his Force, whatever the hell, I'm tired, it's late.
He majored in empathy and the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Right, exactly. So because of that, I wonder if it's like, you can't, relationship building is so emotions based that I really wonder if it's like harder for him to turn that off, because mm-hmm. how is he supposed to not have attachments when he is like a walking magnet to all feelings?
I know.
Poor kid.
I know.
He needs a therapist.
He's a
and a
yes.
hobby.
Yes. You know, he's a poor baby. And also probably doesn't help that he is now part of the Stellan Geos disaster lineage, so that's good.
One last note about that. Is anybody else just like side-eyeing Vernestra anytime she's on the page after watching The Acolyte? Because I sure fucking
yes!
am.
Yes!
Oh my god, I just keep... never mind. Let me keep my thoughts to not be...
You're
going to
become a lying lie face who lies.
Argos? Yeah. Sorry, Argos just ran over to me and he looked scared. I think something fell over.
Don't get mad at me.
Or he saw a mouse. Could be a mouse.
Burb, we know you haven't watched The Acolyte. Vern is in it.
Okay.
Yes.
Wait, you did?
Like, oh 200 odd
Miranda,
year old Vern.
Do you own
is in it.
A computer?
You should assume that Burb has not watched anything.
Anything.
Okay. Like, up to and including the films.
Yes.
If we're being honest.
I have watched all the films, and you know that.
No. But have you seen the horrible fucking Clone Wars movie?
Yes.
The animated one. Oh my, with the
I
fucking...
have, because when Kristen turned me onto the Clone Wars, I watched the first episode and was like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, fair enough.
And so
listen,
I had to, I don't remember anything about it, but I have seen it.
It's going to become required viewing when we have Stinky the Hutt as portrayed by Jeremy Allen White in the Filoni movie next year.
Oh,
I'm
God.
Not joking for anybody who doesn't know about that.
I had absolutely forgotten what? About that. Because what?
What the fuck? All right. Well, sometimes it's nice to be on the edge of certain fandoms, you know?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Devin's like, I'm learning so much and all of it is against my will.
I just... Yep. They can't... You know, what? One day we will be... less like unangry enough to articulately discuss The Acolyte and what happened with that show, but today is not that fucking day, y'all.
Fun fact, yeah, I'm so behind on my Star Wars reading because they canceled The Acolyte, and I was like, I need to be done with Star Wars for a minute.
Yeah, we literally were like, y'all, should we still have a pod?
Yeah.
I watched more of that than I did of Andor, maybe.
Oh.
One of those episodes was like, the one with the fire was really emotional and it was too much and I had to step away. I had very good intentions about watching that.
Wait, but then how did you not know that Vernestra was in The Acolyte?
That was also on a long time ago.
Yeah, it was okay. Like 8 months ago.
Don't worry about it.
Strong Kristen representation in the pod still.
Oh my god. She's Portland the reason in the I'm house. Here. I don't know what to tell you.
Oh my god. Jeez Louise. What the fuck were we talking about?
We were talking about attachment and friendship and other
yes.
things.
Who stuck this in here about?
This is me. I know this is terrible. Like, I get it, but the part of me that's like, yay, problematic siblinghood and like bad mentors, just loved, I don't know if it's Deva or Diva, who's like obviously a terrible person who like commits genocide and kills people, but being like, oh, little pup to Avon and like just like teasing her and being like, I'm going to eat you. Like, I just loved it. I was here for this. It was adorable. I know that she's being trafficked for her mind and or child labor, really both. But I just thought, I don't know. It was just like, oh, haha. I like their dynamic. Is it deeply problematic? Yeah, it's fiction. It's fine. I don't care. There are worse takes in Star Wars.
There's a lot of weird attachments that happen in this book.
Correct.
Which is most of my whole next bullet on the outline. I have a lot of real gross feelings about this book.
Yeah, fair enough. Hey, what if you scooted closer to the mic?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Sorry. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Yeah, so much better.
I want to hear your great points.
go. I have a lot of fucking opinions. It's, first of all, I know when we say like middle grade and like young adult, that does refer to like the characters. Also, this is aimed at like middle schoolers.
Yes.
This is not a long book. It's not an intellectually challenging book. It is deeply fucked. This is a, like, what I have read this as a middle schooler, if it were about, like, not Star Wars, because I didn't care about Star Wars 20 years ago, maybe. But there is so much shit happening. The whole plot is like, we're just kidnapping children.
Yeah.
We're going to either make them into child soldiers, we're going to work them in the fields, or like, hey, we found this one. She's smart. Let's have her make weapons.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
I hear you. I will say two things. One, as a native, like, I think as a kid, I was just like, kids get, you know, the sad shit. But I will say, aren't the Jedi also kidnapping children? But in a different way?
Kidnapping children.
like, isn't that a whole thing that happens in this universe with babies and small children?
Famously, the Jedi are not actually good.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, no.
But I don't disagree. It's heavy. Sorry, Kate, go ahead.
No. I think all of that is fair enough. And also, I mean, the debate on like what appropriateness, I guess, in terms of reading material is a thing that will probably go on and on and on forever, in terms of just various age groups. But like, you know, it's interesting to me that, you know, like this is that child slavery is a topic that we're exploring in a middle grade book, because like I remember when The Hunger Games came out, like the books first came out, and you know, there's a lot of deeply fucked up shit happens in there. We talk about, you know, war and just kids murdering each other and all this other horrible stuff. And it's like quite graphic, honestly, when it comes to just how these kids die. And people were very perturbed by that. And now I feel like that's been so normalized in YA that, like, you know, you can pop out books about just like teenage serial killers and nobody blinks an eye sort of thing. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting what is like kind of like quote unquote allowed to be tackled for these various age groups in terms of like subject material. I think as in some ways the world gets a lot more complicated, and also as we learn more about childhood development and how much kids understand, it's like, you know, no, not really an opinion for me, but just like kind of just like a point of interest that I've been thinking about a lot as we've been like reading these books specifically. So
I do feel like the amount of harm that happens, at least in terms of the POV characters, like for Avon, I'm not trying to be like, oh, whatever, it's not that bad, but for childhood abduction stories, the amount of harm is not that bad, like in the sense that like it's horrible, obviously, but like in terms of graphic explanations of like violence or other forms of assault and harm that happen, like we don't, to me it was kind of like, oh, she's knocked out, now she wakes up, oh, she, someone like, oh, will they hurt her, but they don't actually end up hurt, like all of that sort of thing, which I'm not saying makes it any less traumatic and horrifying, but I think means that like if I were a child reading this book, it would be a little less like, oh, I can't sleep at night because of this. I also think that like in some mid-grade media, they almost glorify the process. And I think Justina Ireland was pretty careful not to. Like, I can see a lot of places of like, oh, the, you know, when the Nile are like having their little parties, or when like when she sees the kids in the dining hall or whatever, the mess hall. I think there are a lot of places where it could have gotten messy and been portrayed in a way that I would be like, oh, is this like kind of like, ooh, my cool escape from life? But it definitely, which like when I was a kid and reading like a lot of media, there was a lot of things like that of like, oh my God, I read this really like fucked up book about like a girl who joins a gang. I don't know why this was a book, but
because
it was. It was a book. I got it at Borders.
I was going to bring up like kind of to what you were saying, Rana. It's all deeply traumatic. Like, nothing good is happening to these kids. But I do think, you know, no matter how much I'm like, this is wildly dark for children, I do think that the level of badness, for lack of a better word, that is shown is, like, probably age appropriate. Specifically, I've been thinking about these books. There was like this series of books that I was reading like at 10 years old, and they were like historical fiction books. And it'd be like kids like from different eras. And I cannot remember the name of the series or any of the books, but there was one that was like, they got into dark stuff. There was one that was literally this kid in like World War II America who lived on the West Coast and, you know, was sent to a Japanese internment camp, and like it glossed over the darkest parts of stuff, but it was like, hey, there's fucked up shit happening. And it was like a way to be exposed to like, this is fucking terrible, but we're not gonna all the way traumatize you.
In many ways, I feel, oh, sorry, Kate, go ahead.
No, finish and then I'll.
I was just going to say, like, in many ways, I feel like that's part of one of the roles of this age group and media for this age group is like, you know, I've heard this example a lot, not to like get on a soapbox, but I've heard that sort of argument or question a lot about like, particularly when people talk about educating white children of this age on historical events, right? And like, while I don't think the answer is to do exactly what my dad did and like tell everyone every terrible thing that ever happened their whole life, I do think that like for kids who have connections to cultures that have been through these things, or kids who have experienced these things themselves, like I think that they go through life knowing that these things happened and knowing these things are happening. And so I do think there's some sort of like middle area where this does sort of let other people have an access point to this that feels safe for them as a reader, but also doesn't brush aside this fact of like, one day you'll turn 18 and learn the world is scary. I kind of feel like it's essential for the age range to cover more difficult things. But I hear you in terms of like, Avon is young and she's been kidnapped multiple times. She's like, oh, it's not my first kidnapping. Like,
yeah.
Sorry, Kate, go ahead. Or
Can I butt in real quick? hi, it's mm-hmm. me, the white person on the podcast, learning about Japanese internment camps at 10 years old because of this. Like, that is such a good point. That's... I don't know.
I mean, but also, like, is it not in many ways... I mean, I'm sure it's traumatic to learn about that, but also, like, imagine how much better it is to learn about it in a book versus, like, either through family experience or in school, or finding out that you're 25 years old and this has been brushed aside your whole life, and then you find out, oh shit, like, what happened?
It was, you know, a very
so
soft,
not to say it was okay,
yeah,
but like,
soft landing as a 10-year-old white child to learn about, like, these horrors. But I do think that's a good point about the purpose of middle grade books and having things of I don't know what the word I'm looking for is. This level of seriousness, darkness, this level of something that there's an academic word for that I know and cannot think of.
Yes.
Come on, MFA.
Yeah. Man, I'm so sleepy. I don't even... First of all, Miranda, I think I also read those books because I read my way through the library as a child because I didn't want to be in my house. That's Hell another yeah. story. Anyway, I think they were like, were they the Dear America?
That sounds familiar. It was something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They were
yeah.
each a different color.
Yes. Yes.
There was that one might have been like the green one or like the dark red one.
You I'm would just remember that. I do remember like I remember them like I think they started out with a lot of like Revolutionary War yeah. whatever the heck crap, and then they like were like, oh, maybe we should do literally anything else, and
that,
you know,
that's how I got into them, I feel yeah, like because yeah. I was really into that when I was a kid.
Sounds like you. Yes. And yeah, I everything Rana said. Yes. I you know, it's one of those things where, like, I don't know, you can like draw a straight line from like debating appropriateness to book banning and all this other stuff. So yeah, it gets it like thinking about appropriateness, I think gets a little hairy. It's for me, it's one of those things where it's just like, maybe parents should know what their kids are reading. My mom sure didn't know what I was reading, and I shouldn't have been reading most of that shit, but whatever, it's fine. And then, you know, the other thing is that, like, the other thing to think about probably is that kids now, I think, are so much more aware that bad stuff happens. Like, you know, like, the active shooter drills just happen, like, all the fucking time. It's just fucking dreadful. So, you know, it's not like they don't know that horrible stuff happens. And then the other thing, too, I think, for this book specifically is that while... no, like, terrible physical harm comes to Avon, as we've said. There is a strong suggestion that very horrible things are physically happening to the other kids. And, like, it's the kind of thing where, like, you know, Chris and I are watching The Simpsons because Chris has never seen The Simpsons because he's a bad person. And, you know, there are just so many, like, jokes in there that were deeply inappropriate for me as a child that just went straight over my head. And I feel like this book, too, has a lot of stuff where, like, you know, if your brain isn't prepared to get it, it'll go straight over your head and you'll be fine. And maybe you'll look back on it in 10 years and be like, oh, they were like mutilating children out there and shit. Like, you know, so it's, yeah, sometimes your brain filters it out for you.
I'm choosing to believe that y'all were actually just reading the Magic Tree House books.
I love the Magic Tree House books.
Okay, very separate so series.
Shit was fun. Anyway.
The Titanic one was my shit, man.
Oh my god. Why are you the way that you are? All right.
I have more things I feel icky about.
All right.
Can
so...
I talk about them?
Yes.
Yes.
Go. So speaking of, and this also goes back to what we were kind of almost getting at about like the relationship between the Nile and... what's her fucking name? Avon.
Good.
There is a lot. Basically, like, her whole plot in this book, other than like, oh, the Nile came, I need to get my friends to rescue us. It's just adults like manipulating a deeply, somebody wrote autistic coded. I'm just calling her autistic because I don't give a fuck. Taking advantage like of an autistic child. Or is she 18? Did we say she was 18?
No.
No, she's like 12.
Yeah.
What?
She's somewhere between like 10 and 12, I believe.
Fuck.
What? Yeah. She does feel significantly older than the last book, but she's still very young.
Yeah. Because I think the last book she was like 8 or something. So
what?
Yeah.
She was 8. Just a prodigy.
She was 8 when she got kidnapped the first time.
That's worse. That is.
Right?
They're just like constantly manipulating this 12-year-old autistic child and like leaning into, she's a prodigy, she's so smart, she's so good at all this science shit and like science, space engineering, kyber crystal bullshit. They're like, can you help us with this? And like, you're so smart, you're so good at this. And it's, I feel deeply bad about it. I really did not. I don't know how I feel about the book on a whole, but it made me feel a lot of things that I did not love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I, you know, speaking towards that, I was really uncomfortable with like that. There, Avon does a lot of comparing herself to the evil scientist Nihilady, Dr. M. Kampa, and I, you know, I'm just like, being like, I'm not like her because she's using science for evil. And I'm like, I don't, listen, just because we have like a more fully fleshed out autistic character doesn't mean that we can also just like use an autistic trope as a foil to show how good this one character is. It may be really deeply uncomfortable the way that like, you know, this, that Avon's being compared to this person who is also super interested in technology and science and super smart, and but is also a complete, like, literal psychopath. That felt real fucking bad. And like, you know, if this character had felt, had been like a one off, maybe that would have been fine. But you know, it's, you know, it's strongly suggested that she survives whatever fuck shit goes down on Dalna and will come back again later. And also, you know, also goes, also follows the lines of that old Star Wars trope that like disabled people are evil, which I really also didn't like at all. So, because she's described as being strongly cybernetically enhanced. So all these things gave me the ick. So I hear you, Burb. I really didn't love any of that at all.
Yeah, and it's tempered a bit by like, you know, we do get all of that text that's like, oh, I'm not like her, and like she's trying to like kind of fuck up whatever the work is that she's doing. She's like putting the flaw, big Death Star vibes, like into whatever she's doing to the kyber crystals or the regular whatever kind of crystals.
Yes.
But it's still very much like, hello, small child. You're so smart. Come do this work. It's just like, oh, it's gross and abusive. And
also made to feel like a reward for her. Like, you're better mm-hmm. than these grunts who are not smart. So you get rewarded with making weapons of mass destruction.
And she kind of is, again, it's tempered by her being like, I don't know about that. But the way that they do it is so specifically like, hey, come check out this cool science shit. Don't worry about the implications. Don't worry about anything else. It makes me personally deeply uncomfortable as an autistic person. Because like at 12 years old, I would have fucking done that. I don't feel good about that. But like, I was fucking 12 years old. I don't have like, that's the thing that like, her being a child, the way they're manipulating her is terrible because she obviously is nowhere near having like a fully developed brain. She knows right from wrong, you know. She's obviously like trying to be on the side of the good. She knows the Jedi are gonna help. She's gonna try to help out, or not help out, but like she's gonna try to preemptively prevent the worst from happening. But it's like, Hello.
Yes.
You're so smart. Here's this very special interest of yours. Don't worry about it. And like it she does kind of be like, okay, well, actually, here's this, and this. Like, I'll fuck it up. But like, honestly, this is very interesting and cool. Let's go.
Yeah, I definitely hear you on that. I think one thing that I would bring up is that, like, I do feel like that is a fair, I feel like that's a very common characteristic of, like, middle grade and young adult literature, is this, like, kind of coming of age realization that, like, the biggest difference between the good guys and the baddies is, like, the choice to not be bad and the choice to be good instead. And I feel like one thing that we did see in this book is, like, Avon learning that, like, her actions do have a little more consequences, because we have in previous books seen her have this just very pure intellectual curiosity about things that I think is very, like, childlike, which is fair because she is a child, and this kind of question of consequences and what I do has larger ramifications is a lesson that she is kind of learning for the first time, like when she and Imri have that kind of heart to heart at the end, where Avon realizes that, like, hey, if I hadn't just kind of stolen Imri's kyber crystal, Donna would still be a planet. And so, like, I definitely hear you, Burb, about, like, the autism coding and all that. And I also just want to add to that that I do think that that's a that morality question and the kind of discovering of morals for young people is very much a characteristic of these kind of books that, you know, I saw some of that in here as well.
Yes, and we're not having a problem with that. We're having a problem with the context around it.
Yeah, that is like very much a characteristic, like you said, and it's good. And I think that's every book you're going to read as, you know, a middle schooler. That's every middle grade book. Not every, you know, middle grade book main character is coded as having a disability.
Hooray. I don't even know if we have, like, quite space enough to get into Avon's mom, because that's a whole situation. I feel, you know, her being strongly suggested to be working with the Nile, I feel like, is somehow, I get the weird feeling that's going to come up again, so we can probably dive into that at a later point. But, like, Avon's awareness of it, like, that's got to feel real bad, and I feel terrible for this child.
Also, the fact that I recognized that when I was reading, bad sign, terrible sign. I famously have no reading comprehension.
I do, speaking of tropes, I do love the trope of, how do you know this information I didn't tell you?
Mm.
That is one of my favorite ways to determine who's a bad guy.
That's a solid trope. I'll take that for sure. But yeah.
That lady's got a lot of things going on.
Yes. we've been alluding a lot to Dalnuk getting exploded. I'm just like, what is with the Jedi Order and, like, dealing with entire planets getting destroyed and shit.
Blow the whole thing up.
It's fine.
Attacking one more minute at a time.
What? Oh my god, stop! Wow, that took me like 5 seconds too long. I'm so upset with you now. You have nothing to say for yourself, do you?
I don't feel I need to say anything for myself.
What the fuck is wrong with you, man?
I feel like that joke spoke for itself.
I got you, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Devin. Thank you, Devin.
Don't encourage me.
Where did we get this one? I've never heard that before.
I think we haven't heard it, but I love it being used sarcastically.
I'm just trying to be supportive.
Okay. Are we comfortable doing a few wrap-up things before we get going for this book? All right.
Can I say two things just because I want my points to get in? Yeah. One, again, deeply queer book in a way I don't like. All of I'm projecting, most of the women, specifically the villains, were giving me queer vibes.
I would agree.
We love the gays, but not in this sense. Also, I'm losing my mind at the fact that, like, the last quarter of the book, there's a whole ass man-made climate crisis.
Nothing making, like, planetary, like, Pompeii shit happening. And
just
I love
boop,
to breathe
boop,
in
boop.
The ashes of my house burning down from lava and shit.
Oh, look.
It did make me wonder how small this planet is, though.
It's small.
Because, like, the entire planet needs to evacuate.
Right. Like,
they
okay.
said there's only, like, a million people there.
Yes.
But, I mean, that's for population, but I guess they all live in, like, one island.
Yeah, they were saying that it was you know, just, like, physically a small planet, but then my fucking brain goes to, then how does the gravity work there? And then I have to stop. I have to stop.
I don't. They got, like, halfway across the continent in, like, 2 days on space turtles. Fast turtles, but space turtles.
Yes. You look like you had something to say, Chris.
Oh.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now you have nothing to say. Now you have nothing
First
to
time
say.
For everything.
He says, I don't know anything about man-made right? climate disasters. Oh,
my God. I think the only thing I would say is, it. Like, to be fair, like, volcanic chain reaction, like, that can pretty easily become, like, a whole-ass global problem.
Well, yeah.
If it's, like, if the entire yeah. planet is one big volcanic chain, which is how they're describing, like...
Anakin did do that two times. Two times, yep. canonically.
Yeah, y'all are right. I don't know why I was like, it's a small planet, because it's fake in the space. So.
It still counts. It still
also,
counts.
Also, like, volcanoes.
Which is why I had to stop, because I'm like, this is yeah. not real.
This is Jess's honorary mention on the pod yeah, for yes. volcanoes.
Exactly. Friend of the pod. Jeshitara was a beautiful town. The only thing I'll say about the, you know, implied queer representation is that, like, I agree with you, Miranda, in the microcosm of this book. Like, across the entire High Republic universe, I feel like it's that all of that is more well-rounded. But I take your point that this is a book aimed toward middle graders, and maybe let's think about how certain people are portrayed. So, yeah.
Happy Pride. It's almost Pride. It's fine.
Almost. All right. Just small things. The names in this book were fucking just like, I had to put the book down several times, like, legitimately. Like, I was just like, this motherfucker's legitimately named Yeet. And I can't deal with that. And also the vice president being named Hack Rack Bep was
the most Star Wars ass name.
I know. That was
Star
even worse for me, though, because I legitimately was just like, giggling like a child, which, again, middle grade book, but I was just like, Hack Rack Bep, like the entire time.
Of the Donna Beps?
Like, I just, anyway, it's fine.
Donna
like,
Beps would be a great band name.
That's true. Well, this is not necessarily Donna? Criticism, but I just, this is just to say that I fucking died.
My only two random things were, one, every time, because they said it so many fucking times that I was like, this is getting annoying. They have a ship named Wishful Thinking, and I understand it is a phrase, or not a phrase, but whatever the hell, how words work. Mm-hmm. But I also kept wondering if it was a nod to Carrie Fisher's Wishful Drinking autobiography, where she talks a lot about her experience in Star Wars, because they just kept, like, why can't they just say the ship? They just kept saying Wishful Thinking over and over and over again. So every time I would go like, is that about that? And then also I just love, like, in true Star Wars fashion, how they're like, Vernestra cannot fly a ship. She's done too much damage. But by the way, Imri, you can just experiment and strap your ship to the most expensive ship in the galaxy and another ship
and
just see what happens in hyperspace.
Let's take this entire space station and just go to
right,
the planet.
Let's just find out.
I just literally like, okay, So Star Wars has for so long very purposefully avoided talking about how hyperspace works. And the fact that, like, you know, the everybody who was working on the High Republic was just like, you know, it'd be fun to fuck with. Let's run with it. Like, that they lassoed an entire fucking space station and dragged it through hyperspace is fucking incredible. And also the little illustration of it. I was just like, this is the best. Like, this is so stupid.
Wait, the
which
books
is exactly
have illustrations?
Where
this one does.
This one, yes.
It has
so
like
cool.
You're right.
Which is great when I was using an e-reader for this and it said I still had 15% of the book, but it was all just little drawings and diagrams.
Oh, good. That's
wait,
so
what?
Great.
Oh, I hit 85% in the last line, and then it was like 5:30 and I had to go.
Yeah, exactly. I kept looking and I was like, something's wrong. This can't be right. And then I was like, oh, it's also a preview for another book. That's okay. Funny.
But yeah. The real question is, did they light speed skip Starlight Beacon?
Fuck off, you fucking fuck.
My favorite moment. I'm so glad I'm off Star Wars Twitter. If you're still on Star Wars Twitter, God help you. But my favorite moment ever was, I don't remember what the context around this was, but like God, the
there
official
probably was no context, bro.
The official StarWars.com did some article on like how like lightspeed works. And I like tweeted at the guy who's like one of like the like head guys at Lucasfilm. Oh, it was no. Matt Martin, for those who are on Star Wars
what
Twitter.
What did you do to Matt Martin?
And I was basically like, how does this reconcile with light, like not like antagonistically, but I was like, how does this reconcile with lightspeed skipping? And he was basically like, lightspeed skipping is stupid and shouldn't exist.
I knew I liked that guy. He's adorable. Every year he does like a thing being like, show me your cool Star Wars tattoo and I'll retweet it. And I always think, I don't know. It's a cool thing he does every year. He's a very harmless human being, comparatively speaking, because, oh my God, some people who work at Star Wars make me want to tear my eyeballs out. It's fine. Anyway.
there was one part, this is unrelated. I just, again, I'm proud of myself for making comments in the outline for once.
Yes.
There was one part like in the first half of the book where I don't even remember which character. They're just like naming things that some of the local animals might do. And they straight up were like, ah, the whatevers do this and the snipes. And I was like,
no, I had the same reaction.
Are they going to send somebody snipe hunting?
Here's
which
snipe.
One is Russell?
Clap, clap.
See, as a Mohawk, I hear about snipes and I'm like, oh, the snipe clan. Okay. They're out here in space. But no.
See, that's cool.
And the bird.
As
the bird,
token
right?
Black person here, I think Wesley.
I love all of you very much. This is the most fun association game. I like.
That's true. We should all do a breakdown. Like first word association snipe. Like what do you say?
Listen, I also
that would be a fun Patreon thing. People just submit words.
Yes. Oh my God, that would be amazing. Actually, listen, I also thought snipe. Russell, my sad Boy Scout Asian bro. Anywho, I think that brings us.
I think
to
Emery would be Russell.
Oh yeah, it's 100% Emery.
Yeah. All right, I think
maybe
that
it's Honesty Weft.
Fucking,
yo, that name.
I couldn't read that the whole time.
It's
I was
bad,
so mad about it.
It's listen. Justina Ireland has some hits and some misses when it comes to
it. It's no hack.
It's definitely giving like J.D. Vance memoir.
Oh my fucking God. All right. I think that's everything. Christopher.
All right. Thank you for listening to the triumphant return of the Book Wars Pod. Next episode, we are going to be jumping into The Falling Star by Claudia Gray.
Emotional
always just
damage.
A fun romp when Claudia Gray is involved. We are, just so folks know, we're actually going to be, instead of light speed skipping around like we usually
fuck
do,
off.
We are going to be focusing a little bit more on High Republic for the foreseeable future. So if you want to get ahead on books, just look up what comes next in the High Republic. We're going to be reading The Falling Star through chapter 11 if you want to read with us. In the meantime, if you have the means, first and foremost, please donate to Stop Ice Raids Alert Network at stopice.net. Promise it's a real site. It's definitely not a scam.
It's not.
And second, if you do that and God help you want to support us, you can donate to the Tashi Station Radio Patreon. It helps us cover our hosting and production costs at patreon.com/TashiStation. We have a new... Is it new anymore?
No.
It's been like solidly a year. We have a $2 tier. The $1 tier gets you access to the Tashi Station Radio Patreon Slack. And the $2 tier lets you watch me and Kate fuck around playing video games and streaming. Kate is playing Last of Us Part 2.
Again.
I'm finally
Again.
Attempting to play Outlaws. We'll see how long that lasts. Elden Ring Night Rain comes out next week, so you know. In the meantime, you can also give us coffee at ko-fi.com/bookwarspod. There are so many ways to give us your hard-earned money. And all of... I like how we still just, like, have not updated the outline for the outro of, like, it used to be, like, we'll give pictures of all of the pets, but now it's just, like, a list of the pets with no caption next to it. So please give
us
coffee.
Pictures of the pets.
There's no context. Note,
Argos, Orca, Flix, Merly, Tony, special new editions, Blue and Magenta.
To be clear, we will not sell you the dogs / animals for your contribution.
Certainly not for $5 on coffee. If you want Flix, we can talk about a price. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joe Butera. Designed the look on Kate's face right now.
This poor empty-headed child.
And our audio and production are done by producer Devin Keyes. Thank you so much for listening to episode 179 of the Book Wars Pod. From all of us, appalled Kate, Rana, Miranda, Devin, I'm Chris, and we'll talk to you next week soon. I don't know how often we're going to be recording, but we're going to be recording, so that's happening. End pod.
Literally, what the fuck is wrong with you, bro?